Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
In association with Viatel Technology Group, IT leaders breathe easy with Viatel Managed Cybersecurity. Viatel.com.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we're going to look at some new EVs, bust some myths, and as ever, answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. But I'm going to start this week with an update. I am doing the VHI Women's Mini Marathon on Sunday of this weekend. And I am utterly petrified. Myself and Kathleen McNamee, who you heard from on this show a few weeks ago, are running in aid of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. They do incredible work. We are trying to get as much money as possible for them to support the work that they continue to do. So if you have any money to spare at all, please consider donating it to this cause. You can donate right now on idonate.ie/newstalkofftheball. I know I've been posting about it quite a bit on social media, and it's purely because we are so eager to get as much funds as possible for this brilliant cause. I would be so grateful, even if you can't donate, if you could share the link on your own social channels, get the word out there. We will be running, it starts at 12:30 on Sunday. So I'm utterly petrified. I don't know how else to say it. I'm incredibly nervous, but we are going to do it. 25,000 women are going to take part, all raising funds for different charities. But as I said, myself and Kathleen are running for Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. If you have a euro to spare, please consider giving it to idonate.ie/newstalkofftheball. And yeah, no doubt I'll be posting updates throughout the 10 kilometres over on Instagram at JessKellyNT. That is my plea of the week. Please and thank you. And also a huge thank you to everybody who has been so generous with their donations this far. We are incredibly grateful. But let's get into this week's show. Derek Riley of Nevo.ie is with me once again. Derek, how are you?
Very good. Yeah, long weekend. Can't complain.
Exactly. And I am anticipating a lot of people will be spending a fair bit of time in their car. Do you know what I was listening back to the other day was the myth-busting session you did around EVs a few months ago. And if you haven't listened to it, and if you are EV curious, go to the News Talk app and search out this. It's literally called Myth-Busting Around EVs. And I think you did such a comprehensive job of addressing some of the questions and concerns that people might have when it comes to making the move to an electric vehicle. But it's been on my mind because I do think a lot of people will be spending a fair bit of time in their cars over the weekend. And this is the type of weekend where, you know, the route planning and the dotting out where you're going to charge, where you're going to get your coffee and stretch your legs and all the rest, This is the time where that little bit of legwork will be beneficial. But again, it just shows that it can be done with an electric vehicle.
Yeah, there will be some choke points this weekend for sure with people in their EVs traveling around the country. But like you say, planning in advance, knowing where you're going to stop, maybe having a redundancy if that charger is already full or that charging hub is already full, leaving with 100%. Lots of things like that will help you on your longer journeys, but sit back, relax. The weather's going to be great. Get an ice cream. It's going to be all good.
It's going to be all good. Sure, it always is. But of course, the news in the world of EVs never stays still. So you, I know from looking at your Instagram and on Nevo as well, there's a whole host of new vehicles out and about, which we'll come to in just a quick second. But where do you want to start this week?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Jess, I probably should put you into a separate group where you're not seeing my Instagram posts, because heading off to Vienna or Madrid or Barcelona, sometimes it doesn't help your mental well-being. But probably start with Mini Electric. We chatted about it when it launched at IAA in Munich last October, and I got to drive it a couple of weeks ago. So yeah, great to have it. Fourth generation, an icon, one of Jess's favorites. Mm-hmm. It's actually gotten a small bit shorter, which is interesting. So rather than every carb getting bigger and bigger and more bloated, Mini have kept to their original, and it's perfect size, It is internally just the steering wheel, the large circular OLED display, and a couple of toggle switches. It's harking back to the original Mini of days gone past, but like a little go-kart, as always. And there's even go-kart mode in it. And I know, Jess, we haven't done a EV drive in a while, but when I do get it to drive here on Irish roads, we'll take it for a spin. And you can hear the different noises. And it's a real immersive experience. And it sounds sometimes a bit cheesy, but yeah, great crack. Really good little car, 400 kilometer range, great fit and finish, beautiful colors. Yeah, a lot to be said for it.
Yeah, I messaged you when I saw you were driving it, saying that it is, if I ever learn to drive, a Mini would be on my list of what I would love to have. You mentioned there it's a bit shorter, so you're a tall man. Did you feel the pinch of that? Like, does it make the driving space that you have that bit more confined? And would you say it's bordering on uncomfortable?
Not at all. No, perfect for me. I'm 6 foot two, 188 centimeters. So it's perfect for me now. Anybody sitting behind me, it's a mini by name, Mini by nature. So the rear seats are going to be on the smaller sides for sure. So it's definitely for children, shorter people, etc., etc. The boot is a bit on the smaller side. But again, you're buying this for ease of parking, scooting around the town. You haven't got a lot of people to move around or luggage to go to the airport. You're not going to set this up as a taxi, but no problem. Driving position, lovely, very comfortable seats. The interior fit and finish, as I said, and the tactility of some of the fabrics that they're using. And we're starting to see that a lot with electric vehicles and just vehicles in general. They're thinking about, okay, where are we getting this material from? Is it coming from a circular economy platform? Can it be recycled? Is it sustainable? All of that kind of stuff is really starting to think about it. So, yeah, good.
Okay. I cannot wait. When this comes to Ireland, I definitely want to go for a spin in that one. What else have you been driving?
The new Tesla Model 3 has been out a while, but the interesting thing about the Model 3 is it doesn't have stalks behind the steering wheel. And so there are buttons on the steering wheel, but when you turn the steering wheel, the buttons go to the other side. And that's fine in the land of America because there's no corners, everything's straight blocks and geometric and all the rest of it. But in other countries, you have things called roundabouts and curves and turners. And so when I saw it at Christmas in the Tesla showroom in Sandyford here in Dublin, I said, what would you like me to do when I get to drive it? And my audience said, let's try some roundabouts around Dublin. And there is a famous one in Stillorgan that everybody talks about that it looks a bit mad. And so I did a video on, okay, what's it like to drive this around the roundabouts of Ireland? I did 5 or 6 roundabouts. I did a 3-point turn. And you know what, Jess? Everything worked out fine. It was a change for sure, but you just get used to it. And that user interface, and Elon has noted in the past as saying, listen, any input is a problem because it can be put in wrong. The human is the issue. So let's try and standardize it. Let's try and make it. The car knows if you're parked against a wall that you have to drive away from the wall. So it automatically go into forward rather than reverse. So there's an element of the car knows what way you're going to drive, which makes sense. You're not going to drive into the wall. But the indicator thing, some people were concerned about it. I put out a video, no problem at all. And I see a lot of them around. So they're becoming a popular car, that new Tesla Model 3.
Can we just talk about the safety aspect of this for a second, though? Because you said like it works fine, you get used to it and all the rest. Is there a concern? Like, will people need to just spend time, maybe drive around an empty industrial estate or something like that to get familiar with it before taking it on the roads?
No, not at all. What it is you just, I think it becomes more of a conscious decision, because when you're driving for so long, and I'm driving 25 years now, it's very much automatic. And when you do get into the Tesla, you're kind of moving your hand as if there was a stalk there, because it's an automatic gesture for you.
Yeah.
So you definitely have to think about it more. Is there a safety concern? Not at all. It has been tried and tested. And I said, you see it around the place. And after a couple of minutes, you do get used to it. And I jumped into another car afterwards and I was looking for the buttons on the steering wheel, not the stalk on the indicator. And so, yeah, there's no safety. Now, overall, Euro NCAP, the crash test people in Europe, are looking at, is there too much stuff going into screens? Do we need physical buttons for the likes of air conditioning, et cetera, et cetera? And so they may start changing their rating system to say, everything can't be on the screen. We're going to need an element of physical buttons so that when somebody's driving down the road, they don't need to look at a screen. They can reach over and twist a knob for the radio or touch a button to defrost the windscreen or whatever it may be, or defog the windscreen or whatever that may be, rather than relying on a screen and being distracted. So there are rumors about Euro NCAP make taking us back from the screen and putting more buttons and knobs into the actual cars, but hasn't been confirmed yet.
Okay, well, that's definitely something that we'll watch with interest and see what comes of it. I want to talk to you a little bit about Hyundai. They are constantly... I've seen more of them on the roads, and I have to say I love the look of some of their cars. What have you been in one of those recently?
I have. I was in the Ioniq 5N, and I didn't stop smiling for about 26 hours. Aww. It is their performance version of their best-selling World Car of the Year, Ioniq 5. Phenomenal car. And they got the N division, which is their racing division, to say, right, lads and ladies, if we're going to put this around a track, what would you do to change it? And they have worked their magic on it. Now, Jess, it's €80,000. So it is very much on the more expensive side. But is it worth it? God, it'd be very close to saying yes, because there's noises very much like we talked about with the Mini. But this thing is so immersive, so much so that there's an artificial gearbox in it. So even though all electric cars are single motor, usually one gear, this thing has artificial gear changes. So as you're driving along, it's shifting up or shifting down. You can control it. It pops, it burps, it farts. It does all the things that a little boy racer or girl racer car does. It was amazing. And it's not just the artificial noise and the artificial gearbox. It's actually set up to be a real racing car. It can go twice around the Nürburgring in Germany without failing. The brakes don't fail. The suspension is amazing. If you get an opportunity to drive this car, if you're listening to this and you're going, a car that makes noises and has a fake gearbox, try this out. It is class.
Sound like a child. It's
if I got this for Christmas, I would be very happy. So Santa Claus, if you're listening, I've been a very good boy so far this year, but it is only June. But yeah, Ioniq 5N, it's doing a bit of a roadshow around Ireland at the moment to the dealerships. So if it's in your neighborhood, definitely get along to it. It's every journalist that has driven it has said the same thing. It is universally loved.
And as I said, they are just a great looking car as well, which does, I know it's superficial, but it does make a difference. I know there's a whole host of other cars that you've driven. We might come back to them in a sec, but you've bought the cheapest used EV in the UK and Ireland.
Yeah, £1,500. It is interesting. It is a little Peugeot Ion. It's red, it's tall, it's a four-seater. It looks like Postman's Pat's van with windows in the back. We call it the ladybug here in the house, and it's great. You know, it's got 160,000 kilometers on it. It does need a bit of TLC on the outside, but I'm loving it. It has a small range of about 60 or 70 kilometers, so it is literally for potting around, going to the shops and around the locale. But for €1,500, it's got air conditioning, it's got climate control, it's got so much stuff in it. And I got it checked recently with Best Drive, because they did an EV service on it, and perfect. It doesn't have any rot or wear underneath. It's been really looked after. They checked the service history. It's 11 years old. And so I'm going to be doing a whole YouTube series on it to say, do you know what? You don't always have to buy new. You can buy something used and get something that's for your purpose. And I don't need big range for myself and herself potting around here in Dunleary. And yeah, it puts a smile on everybody's face. Which is kind of a theme so far this episode, Jess. There's been a lot of smiling in it, but loving it. And as I said, there'll be a whole series of me respraying it and checking. I might upgrade the battery in it to give it a bit more range. So there's all that kind of stuff that's coming down the line.
It makes me happy to hear that it's 11 years old, because one of the myths in that myth busting podcast I referred back to was that people had questions around the shelf life of these cars and the resellability. And there's been a whole host of talk in the press in the last wee while about certain dealers not reselling EVs and so on. Like, have we fully put that notion to bed now that you know, this is a one-stop shop car and then it ends up in the scrap heap?
Yeah, and you know what? We did some research this week. I was on with Pat on Tuesday morning about some of the stats that we're after pulling off the system, because here at Nevo, we've access to see what's on the marketplace and what's happening. So our finance partner is Bank of Ireland, and they'll be the biggest underwriter in Ireland. And I rang them up and I said, guys and girls, when somebody goes into a PCP or a HP deal after 3 years and they're driving an electric vehicle after 3 years, what's happening to that person? Are they going back into petrol or diesel? Ooh. Are they staying in an electric vehicle? And 9 out of 10 people stay electric. So first of all, people like it. People get used to it. If it was as bad as what sometimes you see on social media with the misinformation and the disinformation, people would be running out of EVs in their droves, but they're not. 9 out of 10. Now, there's still that 1 out of 10 that didn't work out for them. The circumstances may have changed. But I think 9 out of 10, first of all, is a huge tick from everybody to say, this is a nice way of driving and this is why we like it and we're going to stay in it. Your point about dealers saying, oh, these EVs aren't selling or they're not moving or used EVs aren't selling. We dove into the data. It's all about the data, Jess. And we went and said, right, there's 35,000 used vehicles on forecourts around Ireland. What's the difference between an electric vehicle and a petrol or diesel vehicle? How long are they staying on that forecourt? 90 days is usually the industry standard. And it's about 6% are left EVs after 90 days. 16% of petrol or diesels are left after 90 days. So what that tells us here at Nevo is used EVs are selling faster. They're not hanging around. People are buying them. People are seeing the value. And so lots of positivity there. And again, talking about the facts rather than hearsay or down the pub or you see it on social media, these are the actual facts.
And again, you know, we always talk and come back to the point around education. If you do have any questions, just email them in to me, techtalk@newstalk.com. Of course, nevo.ie is a great resource as well. And Derek, are you finding that people are coming informed? Like this is something that we've spoken about before, but like a car is a big purchase. Doesn't matter what kind of car it is, what brand, anything like that. It's a big purchase usually. So are you finding that people are, you know, going in with the right questions in mind, but also with their own bit of research in the back pocket?
100%. It's the second biggest purchase usually somebody makes after a house. After a car, then it's probably a kitchen. And so, yes, it is a big consideration. And so what people are doing, and that's why we've got such great interaction here on the show, people are emailing into you or they're listening back on the podcasts. They're going on to Nevo. They're going on to our YouTube channel to see the reviews. And so they're walking into a dealership because they don't want to feel like they're stupid. They want to be educated on the whole process. So when they walk into the dealership and they're talking to that salesperson, they're saying, I'm thinking about this car and I know it does this. And what's actually happening is that they're finding if the salesperson isn't as educated as them, they're walking away going, do you know what? You don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to go somewhere that actually knows what they're talking about. So the education on the other side needs to be up to par to the actual purchaser. And what we're finding is we have dealer groups and we have garages and we have brands coming to us here at Nevo to say, we want to work with you to get the most and best information out to our salespeople because the consumer and the customer is coming in with the information. We want to make sure that we're giving the right information, we're not being caught off guard, and that it's all actual facts rather than what we were saying already, people trying to bluff. And you're hearing stories about people who don't sell electric vehicles on a regular basis or don't even have a workshop, and they're saying this, that, or the other. But what we're finding is the consumer is making the educated journey. And so whether it's 9 out of 10 staying in electric vehicles, whether it's people buying used EVs, the price of vehicles are coming down as well. The new price for an electric vehicle, the top 10, the average price has gone from just over 50,000 euros down to just under 43,000 euros. So the average, the ease to get in, and I'm not saying that 43,000 euros isn't cheap, don't get me wrong, but the more affordability, because a petrol or a diesel engine, that's around 38,000 euros. So the gap of that price parity is getting closer and closer. So now when Jess does get her driving license, she'll go, okay, I want to get a car that's going to get me from here to here. The price is roughly going to be the same, but you're going to go petrol, hybrid, plug-in, petrol, diesel. It's going to be down to, okay, show me running costs. How easy is it to charge? And it's the price isn't a factor anymore. There was an issue there where range awareness and range anxiety was mentioned every single day, every single week. We're seeing more and more charging stations opening up around the country. It's not that they're getting less. We're getting more and more of them. So all of these reasons not to go electric are just being ticked off. And it's just becoming easier and easier.
Yeah. And look, again, we're going to continue to do the work that we're doing of informing and educating and answering questions. Again, the email address as ever, if you want to get in touch, is techtalk@newstalk.com. Derek, before I let you go, I remember a few months ago when it was absolutely Baltic, you gave us some top tips for driving your EV in the cold and just trying to make sure you're getting the most out of the battery as possible. Hopefully, fingers crossed, the weather is decent this weekend, all weekend long. Does the hotter weather impact performance? And is there anything that EV drivers should do or could do to try and help?
Grace or Jess, great question. I mixed Grace and Jess together there. So great question. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get too hot here in Ireland, but in more warm, more climates like the Mediterranean or in different continents, if a battery gets too hot, it doesn't like that either. So, but Ireland, we're never going to get that. But you can precondition your vehicle to be air conditioned before you leave to cool the car down if you're finding it a bit too hot. So when it's still plugged into your house or the hotel that you're staying in down in Mayo or Kerry or wherever you're traveling to this weekend, you can go onto your app and actually precondition it to actually keep the car at a certain temperature if you like it at 19 degrees and it's hopefully 23 degrees outside. So preconditioning before you leave wherever you're leaving from is always a great, and just understanding that air conditioning, heating or cooling will affect the range, and but not too bad here in Ireland with the weather that we get. We're pretty in the, we're in that Goldilocks zone with regards to getting too hot. But great question. Just precondition before you go. Plan your route for that long weekend. Try and go to a charging hub that has multiple chargers so that you're going through it faster, because there'll be more availability rather than relying on one or two. And as I said, enjoy it. Get an ice cream for yourself. Sit back and relax.
Fantastic. Look, Derek, as always, thank you so much. Again, keep your questions coming in, techtalk@newstalk.com, and Derek will be back with more reviews, news and all the rest in the coming weeks. But for now, Derek, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jess.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Now, earlier this week, Frontline Gardaí in Dublin began wearing body-worn cameras. This is a pilot program that will eventually be rolled out next year. It's been a controversial topic. There has been many thoughts and feelings shared across the board on this issue. Technology journalist Emmett Ryan is with me now. Emmett, how are you?
Getting there, Jess.
Good stuff. So this is something that's been spoken about for quite a while, that Gardaí would wear body-worn cameras. It's been a controversial topic. People on different sides of this debate. What do we know about the cameras that the Gardaí will be wearing?
Well, the look will be quite familiar, because anyone who's seen sort of, you know, been in the UK and seen them there or in the US, they look pretty much identical to those. So the look will be quite familiar. What we know is that there'll be limitations in how they're used, and these are posing all kinds of questions to me. So essentially, they can only be they'll be worn on the Garda's chest. They'll flash red when they're turned on. The Garda is advised to tell the public when they're using them, but doesn't have to, which is immediately a bit of a red flag for me. And furthermore, they can only be switched on when members of the Garda are using their powers, which, these are all kinds of red flags to me, to be honest, in terms of the public rights. So the footage itself will not be accessible to the Garda at the moment. They'll have to put it into a docking station to, you know, when they get back to base or so, or what have you, in order for it to actually be found. But they're sort of slowly going through it.
Yeah, so it's going to be, it's working on a pilot basis to begin with. So I think 350 guards are going to use them.
Yeah,
ahead of a rollout next year. I was in the West Midlands a few years ago, and I did an interview with police from there who use body-worn cameras. And the point that the police made to me was that, they're filmed by the public the entire time. This is something that could be utilised to help gather evidence, but also to protect the Gardaí as well, because we have seen footage from around this country of acts of violence against Gardaí, intimidation against Gardaí. So in that instance, some of the things that you mentioned as red flags kind of make sense to me.
See, they're not the red flags for me, Jess, is what I should point out. The red flags for me are, you actually brought it up there, they're filmed by the public all the time, that it's not continuously on, essentially, that the guard is controlling when it's on and off is my big concern. Because to me, that's sort of, you know, an editing of the record, so to speak. Like, obviously, there's a GDPR concern there, but if the data can only be accessed certain ways, like, there's ways to protect this data within GDPR, but for me, the only publicly safe way for this to operate would be continuously operational with no power to edit.
But would that not create a huge amount of data from a storage point of view, from a, you know, filing through and accessing and identifying the key moments? Like in the West Midlands example, for what they do is they punch their chest and the videos will record the 15 seconds previous. So the cameras are always active, they're just not always recording, to try and get around that issue.
Yeah, but my issue there is the protection of the public, because it's, you know, much as obviously the vast, vast, overwhelming majority of Gardaí are good, the point is, I would, like, a camera that's never off is neutral, you know, and so that to me is like, it's a neutral viewpoint. So the idea that it's in one particular individual's power, even if they are an officer of the state, is extremely concerning to me. And like, yeah, it creates a huge data storage issue, but if you want to have cameras on Gardaí, I think you got to accept there's going to be certain prices to pay, and that will be in terms of managing all this data storage. So if they want to do it and protect the public and for the public to feel safe, that it's a neutral arbiter in the truest sense is the only way for that to happen to me. Like, I find the idea that it can be selected when it's on and off, and that they don't have to say when it's on, are both concerning matters to me. Like, to me, it should just be permanently on at the end, and that you can find ways to protect it and observe privacy laws after that. But in order to protect the individual who's having an encounter with a member of an Garda Síochána Síochána, as much as protecting the guard themselves, because they have to both be treated with the same level of, you know, equality of protection, I think it should be permanently on, and that's the only fair, reasonable way to do it.
But I know that there are groups who are, you know, vehemently against the notion of cameras being utilised in any instance. So could you see, you know, Helen McEntee or anyone from the Department of Justice or law enforcement being able to win the public round with this notion of Gardaí wearing always on cameras?
I think in terms of the vast majority of the public, it'd be a lot easier to win them around than with the Gardaí having powers to when you turn them on, to be honest. Because to me, it's a lot safer having it always on for the public than it is having it being selected when it can be turned on and off.
Yeah, I'd love to know what you think. Email me techtalk@newstalk.com. We know that technology is infiltrated every industry, and policing is no different. I've been out with the Roads Traffic Division, and I've seen how they're using mobile phones now for road traffic offences. Do you see body-worn cameras as an asset and as a tool as useful as the mobile phones on the side of the road? Or is it just to tick a box and say, well, actually, this is exactly what happened?
Format it currently is a box tick. Like, if it was a format I'm describing, I think it could be an immensely important tool for reducing just general risks to the Gardaí in general, because, you know, because as well as, you know, the factor of, you know, the protection of the Garda. Because you say, like, it'll record 15 seconds back if they press the button. This is assuming they get their finger to press the button in time, being blunt about it, you know, if someone jumps them. So, you know, for me, it's a case of, if it's always on, it's always protecting. Mm-hmm. So, for me, that is the only way for it to truly work. Like, I was reading through this, and I was kind of going, this is a level of editing which really shouldn't be in place and shouldn't be in the power, and also shouldn't really be forced upon the guard to choose, frankly. You know, it's asking far too much of the member of the law enforcement themselves in order to exactly work out what exactly it is. You've got effectively have 15 seconds to work out, when you think about it, whether or not you're now enacting your duties.
Well, look, to be fair to the guards, and I do think it's important to say, but just for the sake of clarity, like, editing and all the rest, that I don't think that's necessarily a fair term to use. I think it will be a judgment call. But I think it's a level up from a guard doing a written report of an encounter if, you know, it's kind of just a more modern way of them filling in their notebook at the end of the day, no?
It is, but again, like, I know I'm coming back to the one core point, but to me, this is the defining point of them. It's like, is that about the Garda doing the report, or is it about having a clear record of the incident of the day? And to me, the latter is kind of more important here. Like there is, like, you know, that it's still pen and paper based is kind of disturbing to me in many respects, because obviously people go, the digital record can be altered, as though the written one can't. And it's a case of, well, this is the easiest way to protect it. And, you know, it's like, there are ways to ensure this stays within GDPR compliant if you do it certain ways. Like, there are ways to protect it. But if you want to have this as a way to protect Gardaí, you've got to think, well, they're meant to be protecting all of us, so those cameras should be too. And again, I come back to it, if it's not on all the time, I've got a major issue with it. I could see legal challenges coming towards body cam footage being used in certain ways as well.
Emmett Ryan, as always, thanks so much for joining us here on Newstalk.
Have me.
Yeah, so I think it's safe to say Emmett isn't a fan of this idea. Personally speaking, I think it is a good idea for Gardaí to have them.
I have no issue with the editorial judgment of the Gard being utilised as to when to activate them. I think in the era of camera phones, it makes complete sense to have a comprehensive record of what has happened. We saw this during the Dublin riots, where there was an awful lot of content being posted on social media without any context. There was editing going on in some instances, which is worrying. And I think if this footage could be utilised to, I suppose, clarify the record in some instances, help Gardaí recollect the exact events that transpire at an altercation or an event, it is beneficial. In the instance of the West Midlands Police that I gave to Emmett a second ago, the commissioner who I spoke to over there was saying, you know, when they are responding to an instance of domestic violence, for example, they are incredibly beneficial to document and capture physical evidence, but also the atmosphere or the mood or the body language of the people involved in certain situations, in very emotive situations. The video can illustrate quite literally the scene before them versus the pen and paper. So I think with the correct provisions and rules and regulations and data compliance and all those other things that should just be a given, I think it is a good thing. But as I said, I would love to know what you think. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Right, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll answer your tech questions.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. So many people have been in touch with recommendations for documentaries to watch. I need to go through them all. I'm going to have a few days off over the coming days, which I cannot wait. And I'm going to just binge all of the series. But if you're looking for further recommendations of things to watch, I'm delighted to say that John Fardy is here with a preview of Screen Time. John, what's on the show this week?
Well, you know, if I was a DJ and I was about to play a great song and I'd say we've got a banger coming up. Well, this week's Screen Time is a banger, if I may be allowed. No. I have Benedict Cumberbatch.
Wow.
And his new series on Netflix, Eric, which is terrific, all about this puppeteer in the 80s in New York whose son goes missing. And then this real life puppet appears to him in his own mind. It's a brilliant new drama set in the kind of AIDS epidemic in the 80s in a grimy New York. That would be a show in itself.
It would.
However, I also have the great Matthew Modine, star of Full Metal Jacket, up to Stranger Things on his new movie Hard Miles. And Jess, as if all that wasn't enough, Richard Linklater, the director, about his new movie Hitman. And Richard Linklater famously gave us Boyhood, School of Rock, the movies before Sunrise and all that kind of
wow.
thing. So sorry to brag, but it's a busy one.
You're not sorry to brag, though, are you?
No. Never hide your light under a bushel.
I was talking to my dad the other day about Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, yes.
I don't think I've seen him be in anything that's bad. And it's not that that he's been great or that he's been bad in something. He's always good. Yeah. But I also think he picks really good projects.
Yeah, he does. And he also, I mean, some people would say his turn in the superhero movies or playing Doctor Strange, they're not the greatest movies ever made, but his turn at it is very good. He makes very good choices and he does all sorts of things. He's one of the most versatile actors alive today. He really is, and can kind of turn his hand to anything. And in this series, Eric, he's playing this New Yorker and he also voices this imaginary puppet. Like, he has talent by the truckload. He really does.
How's the American accent?
Brilliant.
Is it?
Brilliant.
Okay.
Yeah,
I always get nervous. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And it never slips. I was watching a thing last night, A Chill or a Name, Nameless, and I thought, oh, I can see where you're from and something else, but there's none of that with him, you know?
I recently rewatched Sherlock, and I know people don't like Sherlock, but Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock was sensation. Oh,
yeah. He was brilliant, and that was what made him, and rightly so, you know, terrific, terrific actor. And you know what? It was, we recorded it last week, and it was right after he was complaining about being tired, jet lagged, and I had just taken child number one to Bruce Springsteen, and I was tired. And we spent about 3 minutes talking about Bruce Springsteen. I said, I think Netflix would like us to talk about the show, but you'll hear all this on this week's Screen Time.
Oh God, if you can bear to deal with the smugness, tune in after six. John, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Right, before John and his smugness take over, let's get to some of your questions. Hi, Jess. Mary in Dunleary here. Hi, Mary. I'm off on holiday the week after next, and I'm going to treat myself to a Kindle. What model do you recommend? Is it easy to get the books onto it? Thanks very much. Firstly, Mary, I'm incredibly jealous that you are off on holidays. I'm taking a few days off this coming week and I cannot wait, but I will be in Ireland. So to get back to you, yes, I would highly recommend a Kindle. I have the Kindle Oasis, which is the most Notions of all the Kindles. It's a bigger screen and it has buttons to change the page. I'm very used to it now. I find it really comfortable to read with. However, if this is your first ebook, you may not need to go down the Oasis route. The basic Kindle or the Kindle Paperwhite are excellent. The basic model, I would argue, would tick the boxes for the majority of people. It has a backlit screen. It's e-ink, so it's very comfortable on your eyes. You're not going to have that glare that makes it difficult to read in the sun. And it's a very comfortable size to hold in your hand as well for long periods of time. That one doesn't have the buttons to change the page. What you simply do is use your thumb, or any of your fingers really, but your thumb to flip the pages. And you could also, the entire screen is touch screen. So say, for example, if there's a particular passage of a book that you wanted to highlight, or one feature that I use all the time is looking up what words mean. So there's a dictionary, so you can just long press the screen and it'll give you a definition. You can highlight, you can do a whole host of different things with it. But that's just with the basic version. It's incredibly good value. Prices have gone up now since Brexit, but it is less than 150 quid the last time I checked for the basic model, and I would very much recommend it. In terms of getting the books onto it, it is very simple. I pay a subscription for what's called Kindle Unlimited. This is a monthly subscription fee, and it'll give you access to a ton of books for free. So perhaps it might be worth looking at, if depending on how long you're going away for. Say if you were going away for 2 weeks and you might get through maybe 4 books across 2 weeks, it could be worth paying the Kindle Unlimited for that first month, because you could get books that you're really interested in. I mentioned Freida McFadden to John on the show a few weeks ago. A ton of her books were available for free via Kindle Unlimited. I think I read 8 of her books. Oh, like in really quick succession. They are great page turners and I would highly recommend them for your holiday. But yeah, it's very simple. You do need internet access. So what I would suggest you do is when you get your Kindle, set it up on your home Wi-Fi, and then download the books that you want via the Kindle store. You do pay for the books. Now, ebooks are in most instances cheaper than the physical book, but there is a fee. Also, the app that I always talk about, BorrowBox, the last time I checked, it is not compatible with Kindle. So if you want to get books onto your device, you do have to buy them via the Kindle store. It is all very simple to do. And I, as I said, I would highly recommend it. The battery life is also great as well. So I hope that helps. And I do hope you have a lovely holiday. Next, we have one here from Deck. And he said, Jess, so Sky Stream is now in Ireland. How does it work? And will it work with a Samsung TV bought in 2021? So let's answer the second bit first. Yes, it will work with a Samsung TV bought in 2021. The Sky Stream, it's quite similar to the Virgin box that we spoke about on the show a few weeks ago. It is a device that's kind of the size of the palm of your hand. It plugs into your TV via a HDMI cable. So you plug one end of the HDMI into the little SkyStream box, the other end into your telly. Then there is a power cable that you plug into the wall, the other end into the back of the Skybox. And that's it. It's simply plug and play. It works over your internet, so you do need to have a good, solid connection to ensure that the content comes to you. The fact that it's so neat is one of the big selling points for me. As someone who was living in an apartment up until very recently, space was of a premium. So I really, really wanted something that was neat and tidy. And the Stream is just that. A few things to note. Firstly, I'm a big fan because it gives you full access to the user interface that if you've seen any of the ads for Sky Glass, you know, their TV, you get the exact same interface. It'll pull all of the content from, you know, your RTEs, your BBCs, the Sky channels, HBO, any channel that you have, it'll pull into one stream. So if you're looking for movies, it'll pull from all of those sources to give you a nice, clean, concise list. The second thing to note, and this is why the internet connection is so important, is that instead of recording, so on old Sky boxes, you'd press the red button to record and it would be stored locally on your Sky box and you'd have a set hard drive limit, I suppose, or storage limit. With Sky Stream and Sky Glass, everything is stored in a server up in the clouds. So if you, for example, wanted to series link, what's on the telly yet? The Jinx. I haven't mentioned The Jinx yet in the show, but if you wanted to series link that or watch it back at your own discretion in terms of time, you would be streaming it from the cloud rather than watching it on something that's recorded on, you know, a hard drive on your coffee table or whatever it might be. It's coming from the cloud rather than being stored locally. So you do need to have a solid internet connection. It's worth getting onto Sky and just double checking that your broadband speeds meet the criteria. Once you have that criteria, I could not recommend it enough. It's a game changer for me. It's more used in my house than Apple TV. I just prefer the interface of Sky, to be completely honest with you. So yes, it is available. It'll work with your Samsung telly and it is definitely worth it. Right, final question for today is from Lucy. She said, I'm looking for a non-smartphone for my 10-year-old daughter. She's going to travel to and from a summer camp on her own and I want her to have a device for calls in case of an emergency. Ideally, nothing too flash or expensive. So Lucy, yes, there are plenty of options out there. I was talking to Pat Kenny about this a few weeks ago, or was it Andrea? I think it was actually Andrea Gilligan on Lunchtime Live. But Nokia is the way to go. Nokia have brought back the 3210. So the phone that you and I would have had back in the day, there's now a new modern version of it. It's €79, so it's not going to break the bank. It is not a smartphone. It's got the buttons exactly like the one from, you know, all those years ago. It is 4G enabled. So if you wanted her to have internet access, then she could. But again, it's not a compulsory thing. It would be ideal for her just to have in her backpack for the calls and the texts. £79, get a pay-as-you-go SIM, or you could put it onto one of the more Notions digital mobile networks or a traditional mobile network. I probably wouldn't if it's purely for this period of the summer camp. In terms of admin and bills and all the rest, if it is just for this, you know, one scenario, buy the phone, put it on a pay-as-you-go plan, and then you should be laughing. I do hope that helps. If you've got any other questions in terms of setup or anything like that, do get back onto me and I will do my best for you. But that's it for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, I'm going to take a few days off, so you won't hear from me until perhaps Thursday. I'm going to disappear. I do want to do another quick shout out though before I let you go. Please, if you have, whether it's €2 or €20 to spare, would you please consider donating to the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre? Myself and Kathleen are doing the Women's Mini Marathon on Sunday at 12:30. We will be running the streets of Dublin to try and raise funds for the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Any money you have makes a huge difference. So please do, if you can at all, head over to idonate.ie/newstalk off the ball. I would be incredibly grateful. I'm going to disappear then for a few days and I will be back with you here on News Talk next week. In the meantime, enjoy the bank holiday and I will chat to you soon.